with Zentester was split tested against basically the identical page with an identical headline, but it had a woman in a bikini standing next to the headline. Now, that increased conversion by 34%.
This is Superfast Business with James Schramko. James Schramko. Helping you build your business super fast.
James Schramko here, and I've got a special guest back for the second interview, mainly because it stirs my other good buddy Timbo Reed from my Freedom Ocean podcast. Welcome back, Luke Moulton. Lukey.
How are you, James?
Good. It's always good to catch up, and especially fun because we get to, remember the good times of dual podcasting. I used to podcast with Tim a lot, but he's traveling all over the place these days, so I thought I'd bring in a backup. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks, buddy. He's been a busy boy. I think he's been all over Australia in the last month, actually, so... Yeah, and it is nice to annoy him a little bit. He did comment on the last podcast that we did together, James, and it's always good to give Timbo a bit of a stir.
It is, and we've come back on the premise of talking about tools. We've always had a little bit of back and forth. I remember you were always the tool spotter and trend spotter, and you don't mind the techie stuff. And I think you've joked with me that I probably use more tools than you. So we were going to pull out the Evernote and have like a trump off and see what tools you're using and what tools our listeners should use for various circumstances. And I guess compare some notes, and maybe we'll learn something along the way about what a tool does do or doesn't do, or discover a tool that we've never even heard of. So I think it might.
Yes, if we're not careful, James, I think this episode could be a very long one. So we'll
do the short version. Yeah, we'll do the short version. I think let's just say there's a couple of things that we should be aware of. Firstly, for any decent online business, and I'm talking about a business that's say generating five figures a month. Let's just pick that $10,000 a month mark, there will be a required investment in a certain amount of hardware and software because it is a business, and you know most businesses are going to need tools. Even a plumber or an electrician is going to need drills and hammers and things. So that you will have tools. The name of the game really, from my perspective, my philosophy around tools is I want the minimum possible tools. I want the best tool for the job in its category, and then we have to know how to use it. And one way that we keep fresh on this is every time I get a recurring invoice or every time I clean up my computer, I just question my assumptions. Do we still need this tool? Is it working? Is there a better version? Do we know how to use it? And I send this off to my team. The other context is that, and in some cases, there's two parts to this. I'm here operating a business, but I've got a lot of team members in another country who use a different operating system. So that's meant that there's certain things that we've had to decide. For one, I only use Mac, so I'm not going to be very good with the Windows tools. Even though I have them in my business, my team use them, I don't use them. So we might talk about which ones we have, but I don't use. And also, I'd like to get your philosophy on how you choose whether you use a tool or not when you're sitting there with the shopping cart in front of you.
Yeah, it's a good one, James, and I probably, perhaps like many of us, probably wasted a lot of time and money on useless tools that I might have used, in fits and spurts and then just let go. So I'm very much these days, I'm very much of the philosophy of less is more, and much like yourself, I also review, go and check out, hang on a second, let's have a look at PayPal and look at what recurring subscriptions I have, and just really be really critical about questioning what's really required and what's not. And I've certainly gone through that process recently, and things like hosting, having separate hosting accounts all over the place, and looking at just, I guess, consolidating like that sort of stuff as well. It's certainly not more is more. It's really more about less is more.
One of the big things is when we take on a tool, we're actually committing not just to the upfront expense, but we have to dedicate time to learn it. And there can also be a error curve where we make mistakes. So it can actually consume a lot of energy to adapt to a new tool. So I'm very careful in choosing what I accept because I know I'm pretty much going to stick with it until something way better comes along or until the tool no longer does what it's supposed to do. So I think we should rip straight into it. And the way I'm treating this is I've basically done a short list of things that if I were to start tomorrow, I would have to probably go out and purchase. That's sort of where I'm approaching this from.
Do you want to kick it off, James?
All right. So I think I want to tackle content because all good web marketers are going to be creating some form of content to put out there, whether it's information products or news updates or podcasts or even just writing stuff. What sort of tools are you using in your lab to create content?
Well, right now I am speaking on a Blue Yeti microphone, and I'm actually using GarageBand on my MacBook Pro. So there's three that I'm using currently. And James, we're using Skype, of course. I'm recording at my end, and you're recording at yours. So there's four already.
Okay, and I've got a different set of bits and pieces to do the same thing. So there's some choices. I'm using a Rode Podcaster, which is suspended on a shock mount, and it has a pop filter to stop the t and the p sound from distorting. And it's on a swing arm so that I can swing it away from my workspace when I'm not using it. That's going straight into my computer, and I'm recording the audio on ScreenFlow because it means I don't have to learn GarageBand, and I use ScreenFlow every day for video. So that's my preferred editing device. And yes, I'm definitely using the same Skype.
Nice, very nice.
Now, what is this attached to? Using a Mac, obviously, for GarageBand?
Yeah. So I'm using my MacBook. My MacBook's a couple of years old now. I'm certainly eyeing off the Retina display, James, but that might be a little while off. It's not really required that I upgrade at the moment. This MacBook has been fantastic, and I literally work on it every day.
Yeah, well, I'm just trying to go from 3 to 2 now. I'm using an iMac here, and I've got this set up, a nice big 27-inch screen with a 16 gigabytes worth of RAM, and it's really good for crunching videos, which I mentioned I do every day. So there's a case of choosing the right hardware for the job because the difference in time it takes for my 4 gigabyte MacBook Pro to crunch a video is substantial. And if you do it over and over again, you're saving time. I'm actually taking everything off my MacBook Pro now to send it down the line to the long line of kids in the family, and I want to just use the Air with the 27-inch Thunderbolt monitor as my second computer. Another reason I need two computers is I have such exceptionally poor internet. I need two separate lines coming into the house so that I can upload on one and work on the other.
Good productivity tip there in itself, James. I might have to do the same thing as we. I think we mentioned last time. Mine's possibly as bad as yours.
Well, when you have two, it really is going to literally save you days of your life in waiting. Now, let's talk about more content creation. What are you using for? Do you make films? Are you using a camera?
I do, certainly nowhere near as much as you do, James, but I've got a Canon 550D SLR, which does take beautiful video. I also, when I need to put a shotgun mic on the top of that, I think do you use a lapel mic, James?
What I'm using the Canon 60D, which is a very similar camera, and I use a Sennheiser wireless transponder and receiver. So it's a camera-mounted receiver on the Canon. It plugs straight into the audio for the Canon, and then I stick a receiver in or a transponder in my pocket with the lapel mic, and I've got all the shotguns, I've got all the wired stuff, I've got the backup zoom recorder and all of that. But the reason I've come back to this very simple setup is it's just extremely portable and easy, and much faster to edit when you have the sound and the audio on the same file.
Your videos are looking beautiful, James. Do you want to go a bit more into the setup that you've got going now? You know, what sort of lighting and backdrop and
great
creating such beautiful video?
So I went to there's a place called Dragon Image, and I got a three roller system for the back of the lab. So it's a black velvet, white paper, and green velvet sort of green screen. I only use the black and the white, and I tend to use the black more because there's a lot of white videos. Everyone's copied the Apple thing, so I use the black backdrop with a light pointing onto it, and then a light pointing back over my shoulders, so it gives that contrast, and that's the one everyone responds to. So you only need three lights, all right, a little three-light kit, and they're not expensive. You can get the cheap softbox kit. So you have one light in front of the camera pointing at you, one light pointing back to your head and shoulders, and then one pointing up onto the black. And I'm using that camera, the Sennheiser mic, and a nice sturdy Manfrotto stand. And I'm using a little RC6 remote controller, so I can flip the little screen out and pointing to me, and I can auto zoom my picture, and then I can flick a switch and hit record and stop so that I can film by myself. And that's important because I'm quite often the only person here, so I don't need a production crew. I can set up within minutes and away we go. And these cameras work with just about no light, so if you didn't even have lights, you can literally stick a Canon 60D anywhere and get a good looking film, as long as you don't have big black shadows under your eyes.
I like the I think the remote is a good idea too, because that also cuts down on editing time for your team as well. If you know, if you're going and pressing the button on the camera and walking back, and the same when you turn it off, it's always just going to be adding some of that extra editing time, I think. So that's a good idea.
And it's really good, and it's so easy. I've got the system now. When I finish filming, I walk over to my computer, and here's a tip: I've got a 3 meter extension USB cord, and it's permanently plugged into my iMac. So I just have to plug it into the camera on its stand. I don't have to dismount the camera to get the film off it. I just suck the video straight into ScreenFlow and edit it and export it into Dropbox, and the team does all the rest. So I do that because to take a 1.6 gig file and Dropbox it on my connection is not going to happen. So since I've got to re-export it anyway, I actually just do the edits because I have very few ums and ahs. I always do my films in one take, and with the remote to turn it on and off and self-focus, it's a very fast thing. And because I'm doing a video every day, that's how I've got the system down to like a 15 to 30 minute exercise.
Do you use a prompt at all, James?
I use a whiteboard. I've got a very light, large whiteboard. It's cardboard, and I just write 6 bullet points and stick it at the end of the room.
Nice. So, yeah, I mean,
high tech.
You never seem to skip a beat, so I'm sort of wondering what you're looking at. Obviously, you just know your topic very well, James.
Yeah, so I do know my topic, but, yeah, just six prompts or 3 prompts just to make sure that I cover the things I want. Now, if you're wondering where I got those topics from, it comes from an RSS feed, which I'm using Speed Dash, which is software that I've got, and I really should turn it on and make people actually have access to it. And so I'm pulling in RSS feeds, and I just scan my feeds, and I put anything useful during the week into Evernote in a news tab. I've got a separate notebook called News, and I just jot down the notes. So when I want to film, I just open up my news tab, write the topics under the whiteboard, delete the Evernote, stick the whiteboard at the end of the room, set up the camera, record, and then edit and upload to Dropbox. And that's it. And I do that every day, and it's quite an easy routine. So we've just covered some more tools there. Evernote.
Sure
Evernote
have.
Is just absolutely the best. And the whiteboard cannot live without. I love my whiteboards.
Yeah, no, I too use Evernote. Evernote's a fantastic tool. And for RSS feed reader, mainly Google Reader, as well as Reader on the iPad, spelt R-E-E-D-E-R as well, which I love. And I think one of the on RSS feeds, one of the other ones that I use is Buffer app. Quite often I'm consuming content in, I guess, at one period of the day, and I see a lot of stuff that, you know, I'd like to share with others. And instead of just, you know, retweeting it or Facebooking it out, I use Buffer app to sort of drip feed to my Twitter feed.
Now you're getting techie on me. I'm just a simple man.
Hang on, technical. or your video gear, James, please.
Well, you know, it really is quite simple. I've just got a good camera and a good mic and basic lights. But I actually film outdoors a lot, you might have noticed. So I don't have to set up lights or backdrops when I'm filming outside. I just carry the tripod, turn the camera on, film, turn it off, come back in. It's done. It's very simple.
And you've done that for quite a long time too, haven't you?
I've been doing it for about 10 weeks in a row lately, and I found the routine of it quite good. I look forward to filming every day. Now, just in terms of low-tech gear, let's just talk about what someone can do if they don't have any of that. You can just use the camera in an iMac or a MacBook, or you could use your iPhone to get perfectly good film and audio. With just an iPhone is a good start. And if you don't have the super-duper mic, then just go down to the local Harvey Norman or gaming store and get yourself a Logitech USB headset. It'll set you back like $30 or $40. And that's what I used for the first 6 years. And I'm also talking to you on this now. My headset is something I use pretty much every single day because it's lightweight. The quality's fine for a Skype conversation. And when I'm finished, I can take it off. And that sort of, for me, symbolizes freedom again. And I'm not picking up all that background noise of having trying to speak on the speakers of the computer.
Mm. One that you mentioned, you touched on before, which you're actually using to record your audio, but is also fantastic for doing screencasting is ScreenFlow.
One of my favorite softwares because I use a template. So every day when I want to edit my video, I just open up the template and it's already got my opening video. It's got my media in the folder there that I can drag down and it's got the watermark of my name. So you'll see it's always the same. Same opening, same watermark, and I just drag my video into it. It's got this great function called ripple delete, shift command delete. So I just highlight the bit of, say I look away or I do an arm or an R, I just highlight that on the timeline and then shift command delete, whoosh, and it just chops that out and moves the pieces together. So that way, and I can also pre-do the transition. You'll see a white flash on my videos. It goes, pshoo. Well, that's built in. So I really can edit a video in just a little more time than it takes me to watch it. So like 3 or 4 ripple deletes, drag in the end bumper and then export to Dropbox and I am out of there. So ScreenFlow it's like a billion times easier for me to use than iMovie. It seems very lightweight on the computer. It doesn't suck up a lot of space and it is also great for audio. It's great to just delete the picture out of a recording like this and then export the movie. And I do use one other tool to convert it into MP3. I could use the call recorder for Mac that we're using to record these Skype calls. That comes with stripping out the MP3 sort of files. And it also has a great thing called split size of conversation. So I can pull out your side and my side and I can delete your side and then wait for your good quality one and pop that back in.
I thought you were just going to say delete it full stop.
No. I'll get you. I'll sharpen you up a bit and make you sound Hollywood. but I use iSky Soft to convert MP3s. It's so fast. I can drop a really large, like a 1 hour long webinar recording that I've done on ScreenFlow and hit convert and it will just rip that thing into an MP3 that is a beautiful size to load up to Amazon S3, which is where I put all my podcasts.
Yep. So just on storage, we've got a couple there that I guess are used for storing and also serving up media. You've mentioned Dropbox, Amazon S3. Any others, James?
Well, I'm putting my videos on Wistia. So we could say that that's a video hosting. It's like a private YouTube, but it's more than that. It saves me about 4 other tools. Now I don't have to convert my video into MP4 using Handbrake. I can just load the video straight up to Wistia and it will it'll multi-encode. It'll encode it in a high def, low def, different sizes, and that means it'll also create a player. So now I don't have to use Easy S3 or JW Player or Easy Video Player, all these different tools that make video players. All I do is load up the video and it's hosted, encoded, and the player is created and it's all stored with fantastic analytics and tracking on Wistia.com, my absolute favorite software at the moment.
James, you have actually given me a quick demo of Wistia, and I've subsequently had a look at this, look at the product. It is unbelievable. It is an amazing, I guess, video publishing platform. Doesn't really do it justice, but the analytics are incredible.
It makes me want to create products just to use it. I think that's partly responsible for my video wave, is just how easy it is now. Before, when I think I'll make a video, then I have to edit it, convert it, upload it, make a player, embed the player. It does sound like a lot of steps, and it is a lot of steps. Now I just record the video, upload to Wistia, paste player.
And then it's all, and then you've basically got, I guess the analogy is the power of Google Analytics built into video, essentially.
And it's far, far more powerful than that, because I can pass email variables from my emails. So I can tag every single customer to the videos and watch their viewing habits, so that I can now create better messaging for them, more relevant. It's all about relevancy, and Wistia is a tool for relevancy. It shows you where they drop off the video. It shows you which videos they watched, which videos they didn't watch, and in real time as well. So I've never seen anything this amazing. I just love it. I mean, I'm not even an affiliate for it, and I rave about this tool every 5 seconds.
It's I did actually make sure that I went and watched some of your recent videos, James, having clicked through from an email, just to, in case you went and checked.
Yeah, well, I do. I'll ring you up, say, Luke, why did you only watch a third of that video? You know, I'm kind of disappointed about it.
The end bit was the best bit. What are you doing?
Yeah. No, but, you know, I actually see spikes, and then I go, when you look at the analytics, you see this huge spike halfway through a video, and you think, what's that? And on the last one that I saw, it was where I mentioned the word penguin. So I know that my SEO audience are interested in what I've got to say about Google Penguin. So then I would use that in my next post as a headline or a tag, because I know that's what they're interested in.
Now, I don't want to bang on too much about Wistia, but one of the fantastic things that you've mentioned, I think, James, is how powerful it was looking at Traffic Grab and all the different videos that you've got in there, and being able to see, you know, not just which were the most popular videos, but which ones were being watched right through, or where people were losing interest, and that's been able to let you refine that product. Is that right, James?
Exactly. I'm making better products because I'm eliminating waste, and I'm reinforcing the things that people are most resonating with. So combine that with a survey, and I think there's zero chance that I could put out a bad product for my second version of it, because I've got all this data. So in terms of collecting data, it really should be under the analytics section more than anything. But for easy content creation, what we've talked about so far will get someone studio quality sound, picture, and viewing. And that is, you know, I think we're on a great path here. Just finishing out content, what else you got?
Sorry, go on. Oh, I first of all just wanted to remind the listeners that you heard it here first. James could not possibly put out a bad product. So it's something you've got to live up to, James.
For my second version, I said. I just want to specify that.
Okay, no worries. Look, what else have I got? Perhaps moving on from there, just diving a little bit into some of the analytics products that that I use. I spend a lot of time in Google Analytics. I don't know where I'd be without it, just being able to dig deep and see, you know, obviously traffic sources, where people are going, but certainly I have on some of the sites that I use Google Analytics, I also have e-commerce tracking, which is extremely powerful. Also, particularly if you're using you know, paid advertising, you're able to find out, you know, where your best ROI is in terms of traffic, whether it be paid or whether it be non-paid.
No doubt about it. The name of the game online, I think, is conversions, because traffic's easy. It's easy to get traffic. You can buy traffic. If you can make it convert, if you can turn a dollar into a dollar 20 or a dollar 50 or $2 or more, you're going to get rich. So the best way to find out what's working is your analytics. So I also use Google Analytics. I think from memory they bought Urchin or something, a very high quality analytics company that has bought it, and it's a full enterprise level solution. They now have real time as well,
and keeps getting better too.
Yeah. They've got heat maps and stuff. They show you the sales funnel where people click through your site, which page they go to, where they went next. They have which people came from multiple traffic sources. So they actually say, well, this person came to social and direct and through SEO and through a paid campaign. You can actually see the overlap, the convergence graphs. Mm.
Yeah, no, it is fantastic. And just perhaps moving on from there in regards to conversion, James, and conversion optimization, there's a couple of tools that I use to help improve conversions. One's Optimizely, which is a pretty powerful tool. I think you use Visual Site Editor, is that right?
I use Visual Website Optimizer, which I think is probably the closest to Optimizely.
Yeah, it is. And there's another one that's called Unbounce as well, which is pretty good. There's another one called Zentester, which Brent Hodgson is one of the founders of. And I actually use that recently, James. Quick story. I was basically getting some paid traffic from Facebook. I'd narrowed it down to males aged 30 to 40 year olds who like fishing, for example, and I was sending them to a squeeze page. Now, this squeeze page, obviously just an email sign-up form using MailChimp. There we go. There's another tool. And I had a headline. And so I actually – what I did with Zentester was split-tested against basically the identical page with an identical headline, but it had a – woman in a bikini standing next to the headline. Now, that increased conversion by 34%, and it does prove to me that sex does actually sell.
Ah, nice. Do they end up buying something? That's the big question.
Well, they were dropping into the top of my funnel, James.
Well, you know, I learned a big lesson last year. I deleted about 12,000 emails out of my system who had opted in, but then never opened a single email after that. And I discovered that when I migrated my system from AWeber, which is another email software, to Office Autopilot. And I was running tests to see how clean my list is and how responsive they are. And I think the cause was I had a very high converting opt-in. It was really sexy bait. And I suspect people were giving away their fakey or their second priority email address that they used to get the download, and then they never go and visit that account again. So there you go. I think when I'm measuring opt-ins now, I'm actually measuring them to the second goal, which is a purchase, rather than just the first stage of opt-in, because you can see quite a difference over time.
Yeah, so I suppose that's where the what's the lifetime value of an email address and those calculations come into play.
You might find the non-bikini opt-ins, even though it's a lower percentage, might be better buyers.
This could be true. Perhaps I should keep that test running for a while.
Well, yeah, I'll set a second goal, like another success. So there you go. You could set another test from the opt-in confirm to a sales confirm.
Yep.
Good tip. Okay, so that's conversion. And I've been using Crazy Egg, which is a very simple heat map tool. For a number of years, but a lot of the tools that we're using now include heat maps. So I suspect that it's not as valuable as it used to be, but it's still a really simple, low-price tool just to get us an idea of the navigation on your site. What things are people clicking on your site?
Yeah, definitely. I've been using Crazy Egg too. And occasionally, not recently, but Clicktail is another one that's pretty good that actually will actually take records. User sessions and literally so you can play them back in video and see where they've been clicking around and where they've been scrolling and where their mouse is moving over the page. So that's another good one.
Yeah, I'm using Clicktail now and I'm going to stop Crazy Egg. But the Clicktail is really good. I used to use one years ago, like 5 years ago, called Stop Tape or something, and it went out of business, but it was one of the first video on-site things. It's amazing to see that, you know, how much people do or don't scroll and stuff. Right. So
I think Clicktail is also something that I've been wanting to look at again with Clicktail. I think they also have form abandonment tracking. So literally where at what stage in the form are people abandoning and dropping out?
Yeah, and percentage of people who scroll or not, you know, above or below the fold. So I just did an interview with a conversion expert covering these things in detail, and ClickTail was the weapon of choice there. What else are you using to analyze your business?
Well, Puttler is one that you put me onto, James. Puttler's great for basically analysing sales on PayPal. That's a good one.
Yeah, I love Puttler. Massive, massive tool for me because it shows me my top customers and my top products, my repeat purchase rate, which is a great metric to know, and I can just punch in any product line and see what my month-to-date or daily sales are, and I communicate that to my leaders every day. In fact, the two I see, my number one boss of the team is also connected up to Puttler, and now she can make reports. So we have a dashboard for our business that shows us our sales, and we can use it to basically measure our real growth and make predictions as to how many staff we need and stuff, because we punch in the number of sales. And that shows us how many jobs we have, and that tells us how many hours we need to complete the jobs, and then we know how many hours each person can work. So guess what spits out at the end? Number of people required. And then there's a plus or minus. If we have too many people, we redeploy them into a different team. But more often than not, we have too few people, so we start another recruitment drive. And using that system, we've been able to organically add staff members to our business. As you know, if the sales come in today, then it might trigger a recruitment notice tomorrow.
Brilliant. In terms of carts, James, I know you're a big fan of Nanocast. Is that the main one that you use?
It's the only one I use. I just use Nanocast for my entire business. So it's literally processing millions of dollars. And it's so good for me because it talks to everything. It works really well with PayPal, with eWay, and a credit card facility. If you're in Australia or the UK, I think eWay is the gateway of choice. And it has upsells and downsells. It's got affiliate programs. It has reporting. And it's got memberships. So I could just go to Wistia, load up 10 videos, make a nice, sweet multiplayer, stick it in a Nanocast membership, and call it a membership. And basically, I could sell that on a sales page, send people to their login, and they get access to all the videos. There's really no WordPress mucking around. There's no extra stuff. It's very easy for my support desk to access it and look up customer details and resend logins. And the API, which is the programming term for the way that it talks to other programs, is quite easy to use. So we've been able to integrate it with our membership communities, of which I have three. So it talks to everything.
Just on membership communities, James, what are you
using? VBulletin is my preferred community software. It's a really robust commercial-grade forum platform, and it's very stable. It is functional. It allows you to embed videos in posts and have, you know, people can thank each other and stay on top of new threads, and it works for mobile devices. It's a great platform.
And not unlike WordPress, they're continually updating it and just as importantly, keeping it secure.
I think it's like the WordPress for forums for me.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is. It's a fantastic tool. I use I have an e-commerce site, and I use Interspy Shopping Cart, which is also, they've also got a self-hosted version called BigCommerce. So it's one of the ones I use. And it's actually got pretty good analytics built in as well, sort of showing value per customer, best returning items, purchases over time. So combining that with something like Puttler certainly gives some good insights.
I've heard BigCommerce mentioned quite a lot. I think that must be a pretty good thing. And I'm also tipping that e-commerce is a good business model to be pursuing in the current and future climate.
Yeah, well, you can certainly see the way retail's going, and online e-commerce is not—it's not going anywhere. That's for sure. It's I actually surveyed my list, who tend to be older males. I have one or two marine-based sites, and just interviewed interviewed, surveyed them around their spending habits, and 75% have purchased online in the last 12 months, and about the same sort of number said they will continue to, and the average price that they're willing to spend is around $200 per transaction. So, yeah, no, it's e-commerce isn't going anywhere.
It's a big one. All right, let's talk about where do you get your domains from?
Well, I use GoDaddy, and I probably wouldn't mind changing over to Namecheap, but I've got so many domains with GoDaddy that I've tended to stick with them. Their upsell process has gotten a bit annoying, and I don't think there is probably as powerful a management platform as what Namecheap is. James, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yep. You might be surprised. I've got over 1,000 domains with GoDaddy, and I have over 1,000 domains with Namecheap. I can tell you, Namecheap is very difficult to use for bulk domains. It's a pain in the ass. So with GoDaddy, you'll get an account manager, and you can just ask them to do this or that, and they'll just do it for you. You'll get preferential renewal prices. They'll scan for lists of certain things. They'll do lots of bulk transactions. And I wish I could just send all my Namecheap ones to GoDaddy for ease of management. But cool. So I would just stick where you are. There's no way for me to bulk export a CSV file from Namecheap to send them all back to GoDaddy. They won't do it. They're not geared for high level volume. They're really good for someone with 10 or 20 or maybe 50 domains. No good once you get volume. So I'd just stick where you are. But I've got my eggs split into two baskets there primarily, and then I've got a couple of dozen here and there, just inevitable with the amount of domains that I've ended up buying. But I will actually probably end up back down to maybe a core 500 or 600 domains. I'm about to start processing the rest of my surplus and release them through my own marketplace. So that's pretty exciting.
So you are setting up your own marketplace, James?
Yes, just to sell my stuff. It's called vredirect.com, and I'm just listing stuff, I'm describing it, and I'm putting a price. I've got a core customer base who know me and trust me, and they know that I'm going to support my sale, and they can ratify things and talk to me about it. So I don't really need to go to the bother of learning Flipper and dealing with the wholesale market and stuff. I just have a nice little market. I did my minimum viable product. My first sale sold out instantly for a price that I was happy with, and the buyer was delighted. So I've proven the platform, and I'm just starting the second wave now. And I'm going to continue a good quality supply of mature domains and websites and actual businesses from there that I support with the same level of support that we do with all our other products. So I'm pretty keen for it.
Nice. Any thoughts of opening it up to others to sell?
It's a good question. I haven't thought of it because right now it's just serving my need. As almost all my products start out, it usually always is just me fixing things for myself, and then other people invariably ask things like that. Could you help me? Or would you? So yeah, I haven't been asked yet, but I'm sure it'll happen. We'll see.
Jeez. Watch out, Flipper.
We have a web development business. We have an SEO division. It's inevitable that it's so easy for me to groom up domains, put sites on them, get them traffic, and I don't need all of them. I literally have hundreds of sites surplus. So since we sell custom sites and instant sites, why not sell pre-done ones that are 3 or 4 years old that people could do more with than I'm going to be able to put towards them? So that's sort of the idea. Okay.
Good stuff. Now, speaking of, following on from domain registry, what about hosting, James?
I really like HostGator. I've got most of my sites with them in one way or another. I mostly use dedicated servers for my selling sites and reseller accounts for just my standard content sites. And I've got lots of SEO hosting, which is a sister company.
Hmm. I'm the same. I'm mainly with Host. Well, I am solely with HostGator, and have been for probably 5 or 6 years, I think. So, yeah, their service is fantastic.
I've tried it.
Whenever something goes wrong, it's always fixed up pretty quick.
Had several other companies, and they all sucked. Every single one of them sucked bad. So HostGator has been outstanding for me, and I have had thousands of sites. So I'm sure I'm not special in their eyes, but for me, they're special to me because they've been very reliable and consistent, and service is great.
They will help you move too, which is great. You can, if you're moving from another provider and you've got quite a few sites on another hosting provider, they'll actually help you move everything across, which is fantastic.
They certainly will. Using PayPal to process everything, or do you have a merchant facility as well?
I'm solely using PayPal. I have looked into a merchant facility and may go down that path, but at the moment, PayPal. Certainly be interested in looking at what happens with conversion rates by adding a merchant facility. But yeah, that's certainly something for the future.
Yes, I suspect, and there is quite some subtleties between US dollars and Australian dollars. So depending on your currency, it makes quite a big difference in terms of the rate that you'll get charged and the way that it's processed. I've just been through the process, and PayPal, as it turns out, is actually pretty well priced and very easy to use for customers and for you. The only bit where they get you is trying to get the money back to your account. If you have to change currency or whatever, you'll get quite a slug. But the upfront merchant rate, it's like 1.1%, is really not bad at all.
Yeah, it is. And then when you compare it to some of the bank's charges, it's not too
well,
bad.
Well, if I want to take US dollars with a bank, it's going to be 2.something%. So it's like double the rate. Mm. But you get your own foreign currency account and your own Forex trader, so you can get market rates for conversion. So it'll probably end up being cheaper on the back end in the long run. But I'm more interested in the conversions as well, whether people would rather just pay with a credit card and in-cart upsells without having to check out and come back. That sort of stuff should be quite interesting.
Yeah, definitely. Speaking of which, I suppose you'd call it a tool, but I've certainly recently been doing some testing with light boxes in carts and doing upsells just as people are about to purchase, and that's been fantastic. So it had average order value increases of reasonably significant. So that's another one to consider. Really simple, really. You can use JavaScript. There's plenty of scripts out there that are available. Code Canyon and .com has some available, and be doing upsells as people are going through your cart. So.
Well, you know what? I use Wistia Videos, and they also have a Lightbox thumbnail option. You can have a thumbnail video that people click on, and then it'll Lightbox that video. And you can have a call to action at the end of the video with a clickable link. So nice. For straight-out info product marketers, it's very simple. You can say, oh, hi, Luke, thanks for buying the whatever. There's also this companion pack or bulk order or additional service. It's just extra. Click on this link to get going, and that'll take them straight to the upsell. Bang. So these things are working really well. And the best thing is I can go and look at the stats and see if people are watching it. And now I can split test face to camera versus slides, et cetera.
Fantastic. Now, James, we touched on Evernote previously. Do you want to have a bit more of a chat about your productivity tools?
Well, Evernote's the main one. Whiteboard and Evernote. I'm mainly using a whiteboard and Evernote. Evernote is split up into notebooks that make sense to me, and within each notebook, I've got my core notes. That's where everything goes. It's my electronic filing cabinet. And I don't use Things. I'm not using a personal Basecamp anymore for that. Everything's in Evernote.
So what's your team using in terms of project management?
Depends on the team, because I've got several different business divisions and they're using different platforms now. A lot of them are using Google Docs. So we mostly use Google Docs because everyone can access it straight from their Google Apps or Gmail, corporate Gmail. It's searchable. It's easy to back up and export and put formulas. So the spreadsheet function's good. The Word type function is great for standard operating procedures. And that combined with Dropbox, where we store videos. We could use the Google section of Google Apps, I guess, the video section, but we mainly use Dropbox for video storage for standard operating procedures, which is our way of showing new people how to do stuff. And because we're scaling, we use them quite a lot. One of my teams uses Basecamp, but they could just as easily use their Teamwork program, which is where my web development team have ended up using because it has superior time tracking to Basecamp and it's easier to use and it looks nicer. And they're very design driven. So the teamwork, what is it, Teamwork HQ or something, is probably better than Basecamp is the opinion we've had. And we will most likely migrate our other team across from Basecamp to that as well so that we're back to just two platforms.
My team's loving, well, I don't know if they're loving it, but I am. Trello. Trello's been fantastic in terms of, first of all, I can't believe it's free. But it's basically like a, I guess like a pegboard. You basically move things from left to right on cards, and each card you can actually have. It's basically like a stream of conversation on the back of the card, and you can upload files. You can attach team members to each card, and I'm really enjoying Trello.
It's a Kanban system, right?
Yes, correct.
Yep. So like agile. To do, doing, done, that sort of stuff. Yeah, I like that sort of system, and that's effectively how we run our tools. Like in our Google Docs, we'll have a to-do, doing, and done tab at the bottom, and we can move things across that way. So like if we want to sell a site on VRE Direct, it goes into to-do. When it gets listed, we stick it into doing, and when it's sold, we stick it into done. So we move it from one tab to the other. So we can at a glance see what stage something's up to. Not as easy as Trello, but we've got a lot of people hanging off our system. You know, like there's a lot of operators, and I like to be able to use Google Groups, the group the emails within our business. So we've actually set up divisions. So say the website team, they could be like websites at Superfast Business, and everyone in that group gets copied to that group email, and that group email can be shared with the document instead of the individuals. So it's much easier to communicate via email and via documents using groups than individuals.
Good tip.
Okay. So we've covered Google Docs, which is great. And what about we talk about passwords and stuff. What are you using for that?
I'm using 1Password. I am looking at, I think it's Passpack to implement for Teams at the moment. But certainly for my personal stuff, it's 1Password.
I use 1Password as well, and Google Chrome to synchronize my my bookmarks. You can synchronize it via Gmail. But I'll give you a tip. I think LastPass is better than Passpack.
Right,
because we had everyone on Passpack, but it is a little bit buggy, and LastPass has done better with our usability tests. And I mean, we thrash stuff. We have nearly 70 people in there destroying things. So, I think LastPass would be my recommendation now, based on our experience with both.
Do you want to just quickly explain the benefit of LastPass, James?
LastPass is basically an online password management system. When, say, you had 10 websites, you can have an administrator go and load up all the passwords for those 10 sites that your users can use, but they may not see the password.
Yeah, so it's great for when you have a team. And for example, if someone should leave your team, you just have to take them off LastPass. And they can't get into anything any longer. Instead of having to go to all the different sites that you've given them access to and remove them from each of them.
And also you can remove them from your Google email system, which will automatically prevent them from accessing any of your Google Docs. And then you can also remove them from Team Dropbox and turn off their Dropbox. So Team Dropbox is the sort of extension of Dropbox. But I'm interested to see if Google Drive replaces this for us.
Yeah, have you started using it much?
Time? Haven't started using it, but it seems to avoid the conflicted upload system that we have. And again, we've had, with so many users, we've found some foibles with Dropbox. We've had entire Dropboxes delete, you know, 50,000 files and stuff a few times. I don't know if it's operator error or just the system just starts deleting and we're like, oh, shit. And what it does, it means that everyone's computer is locked up for the next week and a half while it re-uploads.
Of course.
Because none of us have good internet.
You'd have a truckload of files.
I have 10 terabytes worth of storage on Team Dropbox. We don't use all of it, but I mean, it's a phenomenal amount of data in the cloud. Like the iMac that I'm using now, it's attached to most of our Dropboxes, and it's got about 750 gigabytes used.
Wow.
Because we're a content heavy company. We have thousands of customers, and we're creating videos and text files and audio and stuff. So you know, we do a lot of, and you know, we have a stock library to die for, pictures and audio and stuff. There's just so much content there.
Fantastic. I'm going through my list, and I reckon we've covered most of mine. What about you? Oh,
come on, we haven't even started. Now,
well, I mean, I'm discussing the ones that I use regularly. I mean, there are literally hundreds out there, but the ones that I use on a day-to-day basis, you know, I think we've covered most of mine. What else have you got on your list?
Well, I use Facebook and Twitter. But I want to talk about how I access them, because this is the main thing that I pick you up on. Because I mean, I don't use fandangled gadgets or whatever. I log into Facebook.com from the Facebook app and Twitter from the Twitter app on my iPhone. So I'm wondering if I can learn something here, or you know, using something else, right?
I actually use a couple of different clients, I guess you'd say. I use Hootsuite. Hootsuite's pretty good for being able to post to Facebook and to Twitter. Bit of a caveat on that. Previously, Facebook has penalised people for posting from other clients. I think they've changed that recently, but just a little bit of a beware there. I use TweetDeck as well because I've got a couple of different Twitter and Facebook accounts. I like to keep them separate and keep them in separate clients, just so there's no confusion. You know, just so I'm not posting a personal message to a business account. So I'm a bit careful about that. So yeah, I really love Hootsuite, and Hootsuite's also got some great integrated analytics as well. It actually pulls in Facebook Insights. It also has its own link shortener, so it'll also do the tracking, and so it's nice to keep all of that in the one spot.
Cool. Okay, I do use a link shortener that I've got from Yourls. I don't know how you're supposed to say it. YOURLS.org, Yourls.org, or something like that. It's my own sort of Bitly or whatever, so that I can track links. So that's a good tracking tool to use. I will mention the mind map software that I use, because a lot of people ask me about it from Traffic Grab. It was made with bubble.us, like BUBBL.us. It's a really easy online drag and drop mind map maker. And it's a good way to plan things out if you want to create high quality content to put into training products or just to use as a... Here's a great tip. I, as you know, I run a mastermind, and I do like a, you know, weekly call, and I help people with their business. But I've made a really good bubble map that is sort of like a everything you'd need to know to run a $1 million business, and I've set it as my backdrop on my spare computer monitor. So when I'm on these calls, I can just glance at it and reference anything to do with the call and put it back into its respective area. So make a good bubble map, stick it as your desktop background, and you've got that focus ability. So that's why I'm always on topic. I know what I'm talking about because I'm looking at it.
That's a good tip. Get rid of the photo of your kids and put a bubble map up there. I like that one.
Exactly. And the second screen is a big clue. If you're not using a second screen when you're making products, like running webinars or building slide decks or whatever, you'll find it gives you a lot more leverage in that screen real estate. Makes a big difference in productivity.
I think there's even been tests done, James, and it's apparently I might be pulling this number out of somewhere, but the second screen can increase productivity by up to 30%. I think I've read a stat somewhere.
I've heard that.
So, yeah, definitely. Second screen's a big one.
I will say most of the time I'm working on one 27-inch screen. these days, and it's a
but it's 27 inches, Jack.
It is.
You know, you can fit, and I literally fit a couple of windows side by side.
I plug the second one in when I'm making content. But the reason I unplug it, and I'm almost ashamed to admit this, but when I plug this 27 inch screen into my 27 inch iMac, sometimes if I leave it, it starts squealing and it's got this, it just starts making this shrieking noise, and then it shuts down. So it's like a hardware problem. And I have taken it to the shop and they weren't that helpful about it. So I just leave it unplugged most of the time. So one day I'll probably have a hardware sell-off of all the things I've tried and tested that just didn't work out.
I can see another website, James.
I will. I have to have like a Hardware Direct or something. I mean, I've got shotgun mics and lapel mics and I've got excess equipment, which is the whole point of this call. It was just to say, well, what am I still using and what's good? And I think we've dropped a lot of product names and tool names here. One other one I love is OnlyWire, and I don't use it, but my team do. It's just a really easy way to bookmark a post to a bunch of places with one click, and it's just one of the few tools that we still use in our SEO business other than some forensic and analytics tools like Ahrefs and Majestic SEO.
Yeah, that's something we haven't covered, and that's all the SEO tools.
There's not many though, Luke. That's the thing. You know, if you were to look at our business, you'd find it's remarkably simple. We hand create videos with PowerPoint, stock images, and audio, and we render them on Camtasia. We hand type articles. We hand create PDFs. You know, there's no auto gen content stuff anymore. And there's no auto-submit stuff anymore. We hand-submit to YouTube and we hand-submit to selected article directories and we hand-post to websites. So really the only tools we are using are tools to help look up link profiles and stuff and to bookmark occasionally. And that's about it.
Now, one of your favorite tools, I'm pretty sure it's one of your favorite tools, James, SEMrush.
Yeah, I just got a subscription to Ahrefs because I think it's a good blend of SEMrush and Majestic SEO. But SEMrush, you know, sometimes doesn't update as often, but it's such a good tool to see what you're ranking for or were ranking for recently and what if you type in your key phrase, it'll show you who else is ranking and you can just go and do some analyzing of their sites to see, get ideas for things to rank for. The easiest exercise is, right, plug in your website, see what you're ranking for on like number 6 to 16 and work on those phrases to lift them up to the top 2 or 3 and you should experience an increase in sales because it lists the cost per click for those keywords. So pick ones with a commercial value that are relevant to your business and target the ones that are between position 6 and 16 and put a little bit of, you know, put an article or a post on your blog for that particular phrase, get some links to it, and before you know it, you're getting really targeted traffic in your analytics. And and we should point out Webmaster Tools is a great tool as well for SEO.
Yeah, definitely Google Webmaster Tools. Another one, James, Manage WP.
Yeah, I don't use it. Didn't like it. Wasn't able to handle our sites.
Too many sites. I do use Manage WP. Basically, it allows you to manage all your WordPress sites in one place and do bulk updating of plugins. And as long as you don't have thousands of sites like James, it's pretty good.
Yeah, people say good things about it, but we just use Backup Buddy, and the version 3 I think is pretty good now. It's auto backups, and I've got a team. I've got a husband and wife team, and their job is to manage our fleet of websites. You update plugins, check the webmaster tools, make changes, and just having that. That sort of hands-on approach, I think, has been putting our sites in a good position.
Nice. Good stuff. James, well, we have been talking tools for around about an hour now, so I think we should probably let the listeners rest. There's a fair bit in there. No, there's good stuff, certainly some ones there that I'll have to go and check out, Ahrefs being one. And I am after a bit of mind mapping tool, so I'll have to check out bubble.us.
Yep. All right, Lukey. Well, thanks for getting back together and hopefully we can catch up again with another topic based on listener feedback.
Sounds good. Thanks very much, James.
Thank you.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.